party, man.
Yeah,
I
brother,
can
like,
dig it.
Solid, right on.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Abrams Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You could text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well, Earl. Looking like we're going to have a great week for weather.
Oh, man. We better enjoy it, right? Because, man, in the twinkling of an eye, you know, when you're in the middle of July, if you sneeze too hard, you know, we wind up in the winter. So, enjoy each and every moment of this warm weather. And before we go to my special guest this morning, Calvin, we got to keep reminding people of the blood drive challenge of Civic Media. And so it goes until the end of this month. If you have not participated in it thus far, we're going to continue to appeal to you to join us as we do our part in trying to, you know, alleviate what is a really difficult time for blood donations in this country and across this state. We can do something about it, you know, and it takes each and every one of us. Individually, we can change this whole paradigm of the shortage of blood that exists in this state and across this nation, if you would be willing to do so. We do have a blood challenge, and Calvin, if you'll let them know where they can go to participate in that.
So you can go to civicmedia.us/giveblood, or you can just go to the civicmedia.us homepage, and the link's right at the top of the page.
And yeah, you know, there's some really nice prizes that you certainly are eligible to win if you are willing to participate in that. But anyway, I want to welcome back just a really good friend and just a brilliant, brilliant man who, you know, even though he's got the professor tag on him, he is as down to earth a guy as you'd ever want to meet, is my good friend, Professor Bob Harvey, who now lives in Charlotte, North Carolina. What is that called? The Queen City?
Yeah, it's called the Queen City, though. It's got a history behind it, so yeah.
Okay, so but before we get into all of that, welcome back, my friend. How you doing?
How you doing?
I'm doing fine, man. It was good to talk with you yesterday. It's been far too long, and I can't ever let it be that long again. How's the family?
Family's doing well. How's yours?
Hey, well, they're doing. Look, we're still around, man. Right?
Good. Yeah. That's one good thing. One good way of looking at it.
You know, Professor Harvey, we are going to delve into a lot of things this morning, and before we even move into that, you let's talk a little bit about your background. You are. History, you're a historian. What are the different segments of history that you specialize in?
Well, I spent a lot of my master's thesis was on blacks in the military, but I spent a lot of time studying, you know, United States history with the Constitution, you know, and looking at the different presidents of the United States. And the impact that they had on our culture, and military history. I mean, that's one of my favorite pets, studying military history, especially my biggest focus is on World War II. That's where I've done most of my research in terms of military history. And then, of course, the social history, growing up in the Jim Crow South, as I did, and I think many of us did, who managed to migrate up north, but, you know, living in Milwaukee for 38 years, I came from North Carolina. And I was educated at a historical black college, you know, who at the time that we were in there, we were told in the 1960s that, you know, historical black college was going to be a thing of the past. And then you look up and see something stupid like what the Supreme Court just did, dealing with affirmative action, and historical black colleges are suddenly viable, well, alive and well now. There are 103 of them. People don't realize that there are 103 historical black colleges, and they were put there because of institutional racism. You know, so, you know, I've been a student of that history. African-American history is one of the other areas that I've spent a lot of time in. I've taught, you know, off and on for over 50 years at four different colleges and universities, including MATC and UW-Milwaukee and the Department of Africology. So, and I taught at UW-La Crosse for 2 years in ethnic minority studies. And so I've had a lot of experience looking at ethnic dimensions of American history, which is something that very few people talk about, especially the European ethnic groups. But there are so many stories to tell, Earl, and I've been into so many different areas and taught and written about and spoken on, you know, so many avenues of American history that it's a tragedy to see what's unfolding right now with this country.
So Professor Harvey, that is where we're going to begin. This nation and where it stands and where it sits right now, you know, you talk about military history, man, you talk about the Civil War and what happened then, and people look at that, that's in the rearview mirror. We'll never, ever get to a point in this nation ever again where we have that kind of divide between American citizens. Professor Harvey, your thoughts on where we are right now in this country. Are there any similarities between what took place?
Oh, yeah, there are plenty of similarities, and there are plenty of tragedies. Remember, between 1861, when South Carolina paved the way to fire Fort Sumter in 1861, and fought the 4.5 years of bloody war, tried to overthrow the government of the United States and secede from the Union, when they did that, that bitter divide was real to the point that they started a shooting war. Remember, the Republican Party, Abraham Lincoln came in, it was the Republican Party was a young party, and it attached as part of its political platform, you know, undesirably. They didn't really want to do it, but they embraced the idea of abolishing slavery. But Lincoln took the position to avoid the expansion of slavery. But when the Republican Party nominated, Abraham Lincoln in 1860, the South, some of the Southern states, already started preparing to secede from the Union. South Carolina paved the way. And that election changed that. And when you saw what happened on January 6th, it was not that type of secession, but it was an insurrection because they didn't like the results of the election. So the South started pulling out, and eventually 11 of the 15 slave states pulled out of the Union to secede and form the Confederate States of America. Thus began the Civil War. And the hatred against the federal government was real. Remember, when the South seceded, they took with them 11 million people in the South, 7 million whites, and 4 million of those were black, the slaves, with over 90% of them being slaves. And when they pulled out with a hostile intent. They were armed to the teeth with weapons because the South was basically a military camp. You had to, because you had to keep control of your slaves. Remember, one-third of the population in the South in 1860 were black. So that animosity, and it was driven, that animosity was driven in part by the South wanting to expand slavery to other new territories in the Southwest. So that anti-federal feeling, and the Republican Party caught in the middle of it, the Republican Party for the next 4.5 years under Lincoln fought to save the Union. today, the irony is that it's not the same Republican Party, but it is the Republican Party. The Republican Party of today is now out to destroy it under the realm of Donald Trump. And so that's where we are. It is an irony that the party that helped to save the Union and ended slavery, abolished slavery, and made black citizens, the Republican Party of Thaddeus Stevens, Charles Sumner, Abraham Lincoln, and Frederick Douglass, that party is no longer in existence. It is now transformed into a ideologue party that is based on white nationalism, anti-immigrant, which they've always had a hatred for, and some other issues that we'll have to get into. But the party that saved the Union now is the one that's helping to destroy it.
You know, Professor Harvey, I was listening to something the other day, and it was on a conservative station, and they were clearly touting that in this nation they had a right to challenge the results of the election, the outcome of the election. That's a part of the constitutional rights that they had in this nation, and that they had every right to challenge the fact that they believe that Joe Biden did not win the election, and it did not matter, you know, whether people liked it or not. That's a part of the freedoms that we have in this nation. You say what to that?
Well, Earl, there was animosity when Lincoln won, because keep in mind that there were four candidates that ran good races in 1860. One was from the South. Then you had Douglass, who was you know, a lot like Lincoln in many respects, but he had his position on slavery. And then, of course, you had one other who was a constitutionalist. So you had four candidates. Lincoln just, you know, got more votes than the others.
Professor Harvey, hang on a second.
50%.
Professor Harvey, hang on a second. We've got to go to a break. Man, I'm so excited to have you back on the air as we go on this quest and this journey to point out to many listeners in this audience, both on the left and on the right, just how dangerous a time we are in. And don't let anybody fool you. We're in a dangerous time right now, and Professor Harvey's going to lay that out. Got to go to a break, 844-967-2789. You can join us, 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Roberts, financial advisor with Thrivent. I'm here to help you assess your finances and find solutions to meet your needs. Let's ensure you have a strategy for success. To get started, call 715-470-1303. That's 715-470-1303.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. A mix of clouds and sun today, with daytime highs approaching 80. West winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Lows around 57 tonight, mainly clear. Daytime highs approaching 83.
As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You could text us at that same number. My guest is Professor Bob Harvey. So, Professor Harvey, before we went to break, you know, you were talking about just where we are right now.
Well, you know, we've been in these places similar before. Now, things certainly are vastly different because of the time gap between the 19th century and today. But the animus, the hatred for the federal government, racial overtones involved in some of this, a sense of privilege, you know, that one group has over the other, those things were back there then. And the political parties were deeply involved. Remember, the Confederate South had a monopoly on the Democratic Party had a monopoly on the South. Every state and all the politicians were, for the most part, Democrats. And one of the things that the Republican Party did was to break into that by electing blacks to Congress. Remember, between 1869 and 1901, 22 blacks were elected to Congress. They were all from the South. And two senators, one was appointed, Harry Revels, in 69, but Blanche K. Bruce, he was elected from, I think, from Louisiana, or Mississippi. He was elected from Mississippi in, you know, for 4 years as a senator. So, and they were all Republicans. In fact, the first black that you had elected to Congress, you know, it was in the Republican Party, Oscar Dupree from Chicago, the lower south side of Chicago in 1928. So the Republican Party did have a strong hold on black folk because they were the ones that empowered them. The South, the Southern Democrats were known as the Dixiecrats. Lyndon Baines Johnson was one. One of the reasons why Kennedy won the tight election with Nixon in 1960 was because of the fact that he picked Lyndon Baines Johnson, a Southerner and a hardcore, you know, Democrat, Dixiecrat. He had made him his vice president, and that gave him Texas. So you have to understand that the South at one time had a monopoly on the Democratic Party. Today, they have reversed that. Even though you have a spattering of Republicans, of Democrats in some of these southern states now, in most of your Jim Crow states, they are dominated by Republicans who switched between 1968 and today. They have switched and become Republicans. And that's where you have them today. Remember, here in North Carolina, we had at least some headway in the Republican in state Senate and in the state House of Representatives. But when this woman got in, she changed from a Democrat. She ran as a Democrat but switched to a Republican. And that upset the balance of power, and it gave Cooper, who at least had something where he could veto a lot of that stuff. Now it became a supermajority, and it no longer had veto proof. That's happening all over.
So, Professor Harvey, I'm not saying that we haven't had divides between Democrats and Republicans over the last 30, 40 years. It's been there. But now we're talking about flat-out hatred, Professor Harvey.
Yes, we're we've been down this road before, but this one, this is different. This is a whole different animal that's even worse than it was back in the 1860s.
How? It's what? Even worse. So explain that, Professor Harvey.
Because the thing earlier, now you have more states that adhere to those policies of anti-federal government. You have them pushing idea of racial politics. You hear them also doing ethnic politics by going after Jews. It's right. Hatred for Jews in this country. You know, Donald Trump and the Republicans can preach all they want. I heard Mike Pence the other day when they're jibbering on about, you know, about being friends and friends to Israel. How can you be friends to Israel when you're pushing a party where a third of your people hate Jews. And last time I checked, Israel was a Jewish state. I mean, that, duh. I mean, where's the rocket science at? Because if you show up at some of those neo-Nazi, those skinhead, and those Klan rallies, I guarantee you their hatred for Jews is just unwavering. And then Trump's son-in-law was Jewish. Do you think them people had mixed emotion when it came time to clap for Jared? They didn't clap too loud because he's Jewish. Their hatred for Jews is unreal. How can you blame a population of no more than 4 to 6 million in this country, and you blame them for everything?
At 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guess is Professor Bob Harvey, all the way from sunny Charlotte, North Carolina. You know, Professor Harvey, what is the name of the organization that oversees dangerous hate groups in this nation? I couldn't think of it.
But the main one is the Southern Poverty.
So there's this conversation about white nationalism, and it's not like white nationalism hasn't always been around, Professor Harvey. It was underground for many decades, and you know, it has now been able to rear its ugly head in broad daylight. Donald Trump made that possible, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. Well, he gave a legitimacy, but you got to understand that the Republican Party emboldened that. Donald Trump could not have gotten where he was if the Republican Party didn't acquiesce along with him and rode that train with him. You know, you go back and you read Mein Kampf and you read The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, and you come away with the understanding that what created Nazi Germany, yeah, Hitler came along with a message that appealed to them. But the simple fact is that the German people bought into it. They bought into it hook, line, and sinker. And there's a large part of the American population that is willing to buy into the idea that you are victims, not the victors, and that your way of life is threatened, and that I'm going to take you back to those glory days. And he's talking about the time period that he's talking about really is the 1920s and all the way up through to the 1960s, where, you know, it was a heyday for white supremacists. Remember that the Klan reinvented itself in the 1930s, uprises the neo-Nazis and other white nationalist movements. They reared their ugly head. 1925, you had one of the largest Klan marches in the history of this country. 25,000 of them marched down central part of Washington, D.C. And then in the 1930s, one of the largest neo-Nazi rallies outside of Germany took place right there in New Jersey. So that element has always been there, Earl. And keep in mind, let's be realistic here. The federal government of the United States turned back a whole lot of Jewish people who tried their best to flee Nazi Germany, and we turned them back. And we're not the only ones that did it. The French and the British did, too. And certainly Stalin did his share of killing up a lot of them. So we got to appreciate, you know, the irony here that this white nationalism that we have today is far more widespread in practice than it was before. But the seeds of it, like you said, it's always been there. It has always been there.
You know, Professor Harvey, Oath Keepers, the Proud Boys, the Texas Freedom Force, and even groups such as Moms for Liberty that have come into existence, white women who are espousing the same kind of hatred that the Proud Boys and Freedom Force and all these others are. And so they use that hatred. It's not just directed towards people of color, Professor Harvey. It's directed towards people who are Democrats. And
anybody that's different from them. Look at Marjorie Taylor Greene. She's a classic example of representation of walking around the streets, harassing kids who were part of the shootings at Parkland and at Sandy Hook. She's walking around and saying that's a hoax that didn't really happen or whatever, harassing those folks with a gun on her hip and demanding that she be able to come into the halls of Congress with a gun. I mean, you know, and harassing the president of the United States while he's delivering the State of the Union. You know, so they turn those kind of lunatics loose, and I'm calling them lunatics because I'm not going to dress it up. We are in a very serious crisis right now, a very serious crisis. You know, and we are not only that, Earl, but we're engaged in an arms race. Remember one thing, there's a lesson in history that I learned from studying military history. No civilization or no culture of people have ever survived where they were engaged in an arms race. They eventually used those weapons on themselves. And in case people, I was thinking of the other night about I'm getting ready to go see this movie, dealing with atomic bombs. And there was an arms race that went on. And that arms race was between Great Britain and the United States and Germany and their scientists. And they were both racing to try to get the atomic bomb first. If Germany had been left alone, there's no doubt that they would have got the bomb first, just like they did the jets and some of the advanced tanks that they produced. But believe me, you know, when you start talking about the advance and the nuclear weapon, the United States got there first, and we used it. We used it in Japan twice.
The only one that's ever used it. The only nation that's ever used it.
The only one that's ever used it. And I'll tell you something else. We're going to use it again. It's going to happen at some point. One of these countries, you got nine nations right now that have nuclear weapons. The United States, Russia, England, France, India, Pakistan, North Korea, and as quiet as it's kept, the other one is Israel. Nine of them got nuclear weapons. Nine. And at certain, see, Israel has theirs because we got into a debate with a Jewish scholar a few years back in the 1970s, and we were graduate students, and we had a discussion about what they were doing to the Palestinians. And he looked at us and said, look, we're surrounded. Look at where we are. We're surrounded by millions and millions of Arabs just waiting to kill us. And if we go down, do you know the story of Samson? And we said, yes, do you know? He said, do you know the story of Samson? He said, when he went down, he pulled all the pillars down around him. He said, that's what we do. If that happens to us, then everybody in that area is going down with us. If something happens to Israel, and we all thought about that thing and said, "Damn, they got one guy said, damn, they got a nuke, they got the nuclear weapon," and he just looked at it, nodded his head, winked, but he didn't confirm it. But we knew what he meant, and sure enough, we found out a few months later, because we started doing our research, being the graduate students that we were, we started doing our research, and we had heard that they would have been collaborating with South Africa. Well, look at South Africa. That was white South Africa. They both were in the same predicament. They were surrounded by hostiles. South Africa was surrounded, them 5 million whites were surrounded by 20 million blacks, along with black people in other areas in and around South Africa. So they were surrounded by them, and with the ocean at their back. So they were in the same predicament, and they had their area down there, so they were testing, working with Israel to work on testing the damn bomb. Because if Israel, they didn't have a lot of places to test it out there, because you look where Israel is located.
Right.
So it was amazing to see, you know, how those nations developed those bombs. Earl, someone is going to use those bombs.
So, Professor Harvey, our nation in, 336 million Americans, and we are, the divide amongst us is growing, and it's getting worse. And sure. I don't see it. Well, you said sure, Professor Harvey, as if this is really acceptable. You know, is it going to remain this way, or is there going to be an epiphany? Is there going to be an epiphany with somebody who realizes, again, we only make up 4% of the global population, and we had better get this in order?
Well, see, Earl, the thing that I count on, and this is what gives me, and I'm a pessimist by nature, and I'm 76 years old, so I'm close to either the gates of heaven or the pits of hell, either one. I'm going one of those places. They're going to end up going to both. Go to one that put me out and send me down to the other. But the way I look at it now, the world sees the United States as an oyster. It is a welcome wagon to many frustrated people all over the world. And we're slamming the doors shut because we've always been anti-immigrant. We've always been that way. And there are four basic groups that the politicians and the rich people in the world, in this country, there are four different groups that they target the most. They play the race card. They're anti-federal government until they get in power. They hate Jews. And they have a hatred for immigrants. They just have a vehement hatred for immigrants. And then they always choose a religion. So, and with the issue of race, I mean, you got black folk who are always at the top of the list. So you play race, you play anti-federal government, you play Jews, and you play the immigrants. And then you always throw in a fifth element, what I call the Pentagon of hatred. You go after some religious group. And who is it today, ladies and gentlemen? Because besides Jews, you go after Judaism, even though we are Judeo-Christian religion, a nation and a religion, supposedly. You go after the Muslims. You got to get them infidels in there. That's what the Crusades were all about almost over 1,000 years ago, between 1096 and 1296. The Crusades, to get rid of the infidels in the Holy Land, to liberate the Holy Land.
So, Professor Harvey, people know in this country who've been around a little while that we are in a precarious situation. And you see people like Kevin McCarthy and you talked about Marjorie Taylor Greene and all of these people on the far right who don't seem to care. You talk about the rich people and the people that they are opposed to, but there are poor Republicans or poor people who call themselves Republicans who support all of that and don't realize that they're in that mix. They're not accepted.
Well, Earl, they've been promised that they're going to return back to the glory days. Glory days, first of all, that never really existed. I mean, something appealed to their white national pride. But let's be realistic. Donald Trump, Kevin McCarthy, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Tuberville.
Yeah.
George Bush, the Bushes, Reagan, none of them could have existed. None of them could have existed, Earl. None of them. Without the majority of white America embracing them. Remember, Donald Trump, the majority of the electorate in 2016, and in fact, the majority of the white electorate in 2012, the majority of the white electorate voted for the other guy. They didn't vote for Barack Obama. In 2016, the majority of the white populace, especially white males, white married couples, the majority of them voted for the other guy. They didn't vote. They did not vote for Hillary Clinton.
Professor Harvey, hang on a second. Professor Harvey, hang on a second, Professor Harvey. We'll come back to that on the other side. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. Join us. We'll be right back. At 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Professor Bob Harvey. You know, Professor Harvey, you before we went to break, you were actually talking about the people who actually voted for Donald Trump, who voted against Hillary Clinton, who voted against Barack Obama. And you are saying that those people voted against Obama and Hillary Clinton because they thought that they were going back to a time,
they felt they were being bypassed. I mean, you know, you have this vehement, deep-seated hatred for Hillary Clinton, and she's certainly one of the most maligned and probably the most, next to Eleanor Roosevelt, the most maligned first ladies in the history of this country. When all she did was, you know, they say she was in office for 30 years. You can see the Republicans just ran back. When you mentioned Barack Obama, you mentioned Hillary Clinton today, they go into a fit. That's a buzzword for them. And then, of course, when you look at what they did with Obama, remember that in his first term, only 43% of white America voted for him in 2008. And in 2012... only 39% of white America voted for him. That's amazing. But even that, he got over 50%. And what white America is angry at is that we did our best to defeat him. The majority of us didn't vote for him, and he still got in. Now, Earl, that sends out a message of hopelessness. It says that, you know, despite we're losing control of our country when the majority of us say no to something and you do it anyway. And look at what happened in 2020. The majority of white America, 58% of white males voted for Donald Trump. I think it's 51% of white women voted for Donald Trump. And yet they lost by over 7 million votes. They keep talking about the 74.2 million that Donald Trump got. Yes, that was a lot. It was shocking, but it let me know just how serious this country is in terms of going down a path to mass destruction. But Joe Biden got 81 million. He got 81.5 million votes. 81 million. I heard Donald Trump speak the other night, and he was saying that 200 million people support him. Well, hell, first of all, between in 2000 and 2024, he can't even do damn math. Right. In 2020, you do the 74 million that he got and the 81 million that Biden got. That comes out to about 155 million. So where the hell is he going to get 200 million from? You know, and the crowd sitting there just cheering and clapping, no matter what he says. So the emboldened people here. It's the Republican Party, but it's also the majority of the of the white America that's embraced this idea. That's what's so frightening.
Professor Harvey, hang on
that's
a second.
What's so frightening.
Hang on a second, Professor Harvey. Let's go to Tom from L.A. Good morning to you, Tom. You say what, sir?
Good morning, Earl. First off, we the people ultimately are the government, and that means all of us. So let's not forget that. Second, just a real quick public announcement. All gay men can give blood now, so please go out and give blood. It is legal. And there are a couple other comments. Professor Harvey, you would think that the Republicans, with the history of what they've actually fought for black people early on, you would think they wouldn't be afraid of the whole idea of talking about the history of black people, you know, what they call critical race theory and all that kind of stuff. You'd think they would welcome that because they could actually talk about how good they were at the beginning. This isn't your father, your grandfather's Republican Party by any shape or form. But also, I know we have a caller that calls up on the show, and he was a guest on the show not too long ago, and he said that he was Jewish. How can a Jewish person vote for a potential Hitler 2.0 in this country? I don't understand that. I guess the tax cuts must be pretty great for the more rich class to do that. But I don't understand how a Jewish person, honestly, a black person, a gay person, anybody in those different minority groups could ever vote Republican when you can see exactly what they've done, especially since 1964. Professor Harvey, God bless you, and thank you for what you do.
Hey, Tom, thank you very much for the call. Professor Harvey?
Yeah, they you know, they've always been accepted. Do you realize that 10% of black males voted for Donald Trump in 2020, and about 6% of black women, because the other 94% voted for Biden. Black women are the ones who bore much of this burden, so they, you know, they know where their heads were. It's the black men, like Kanye West and some of the others, that you figure where the hell they're going. And then you realize that Cornel West, I don't know where he's headed. He needs to go get a haircut and sit down somewhere in a rocket chair and smoke a peace pipe or something. I don't know where he's going with it. He's supposed to be an intellectual, and he's running off the deep end. You know, I mean, all those guys, including the late Jim Brown, as much as I adore Jim Brown as a running back, you know, he must
his
play
politics,
football with his helmet. Yeah,
his politics were horrible.
Yeah, so that's, you know, the gentleman is absolutely right. You know, we're all supposed to be Americans, but they are looking for a different kind of America. They're looking for a different kind. They want an America where they're on top. They want it sort of like what I call American apartheid. See, the Jim Crow was nothing but American apartheid. It's just it was not as rigidly defined geographically.
Professor Harvey, I got to get you to hang on. Phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. Professor Bob Harvey is holding class. We'll be right back.